Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
First, let's meet the American League All-Star team. From the Tampa Bay Rays, Evan Longoria, Jason Bartlett, Carl Crawford, Ben Zobrist, and Carlos Pena.
Another payoff pitch. Sent in the air to deep left field. Chasing Terrence Long back. He'll watch it fly. This one is gone. Carlos Pena gets his first Major League home run.
Pena hits a towering fly ball to left that carries and carries and carries and carries out of the ballpark. It's a home run. Carlos Pena unloads. And there's a high fly ball back into right field. That's got some carry to the wall. Gone! Home run for Carlos Pena here in the first on a 1-1 pitch. Pena hits number 46.
There goes the runner. It's gone! Deep into right field. And Carlos Pena has a walk-off home run.
Excuse me, Carlos.
Yeah.
Can I speak with you for a minute?
Yeah.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
Ah, it's a good job, Sean Anderson, on the open there. Just using that one little moment from Moneyball. Excuse me, Carlos, can I talk to you for a moment? Assistant general manager has to deliver bad news for the first time, but I don't believe that's true. I don't believe how that story went down is like it was portrayed in the movie, but it is Hit and Run right here on 670 The Score. I'm Matt Spiegel, your host, pleased to welcome in from MLB Network and from the Marquee Sports Network. It is Carlos Pena right now on 670 The Score. Good morning, Carlos.
Good morning, Matt. It's really a pleasure to join you this morning. And that was a very epic opening, I got to say.
Right? It's like, well, I think that's your life, man. That's your life. We had the first home run there in there for Texas. Had an all-star introduction from 2009, one of five Tampa Rays in that all-star game. Jason Bartlett gets a mention here on Hit and Run. A Sunday morning. I dig it. And then that moment for Moneyball, and that's not how it went down, right? You were traded when you were in the minors. Is that right, Carlos?
Yes, yes. Look, let me tell you, the movie is a pretty good movie. It does the job as far as telling the story of how sabermetrics got pretty much started being applied on a bigger level right there. The Oakland A's, it was so simple. It was so funny because they were using the algorithm as far as how much do you get on base. That was the most important thing in the organization. But no, it did not go down that way. I was already in the minor leagues. I just came back from playing in the infield. We got three outs. And when I went back out there, my manager goes, hey, wait a second. I'm like, what's going on? It's sixth inning. I got to go out there. He's like, oh, no, you just got traded. So that's the way it really went down.
The irony is, Carlos, that like what Billy Beane was after in terms of guys who hit for power and walk a lot and have the on-base percentage and not worrying about the batting average so much, you developed into exactly the kind of hitter that he should have wanted. I mean, those prime years in Tampa, 2007 to 2009, it's like high OPS, lots of walks, lots of homers, lots of ribbies. Like that's, you developed into a guy that he should have been in love with, don't you think?
Yes, no, absolutely. I became exactly the type of player that he would have wanted in that ball club. But at that time, I was just a rookie, 2002, just started playing as a regular in the big leagues after being traded from the Oakland A's. It was crazy. I got traded with, twice. In a matter of a year and a half. And then eventually ended up with the Detroit Tigers. when I got traded from Oakland. But yes, I became a hitter that got on base a lot, even though I did that in the minor leagues as well, Matt. But maybe the Oakland A's had just different plans. They wanted the now, immediate. You know, they didn't look into the future. It was more about let's do what we got to do right now. So they did something very clever. They actually added two players, put them together. It was Giambi, Jason Giambi's brother, and also Jeremy. Hatteberg together. Yeah, Jeremy. Together, they added up, their on-base added up to be higher than mine. So that was, in simple terms, that was pretty much it. Not doing it justice because they were a little bit more sophisticated at that. But in simple terms, that was it. Later on, of course, you know, I ended up being that type of player, getting on base a lot and hitting home runs. I missed that.
I bet. How are you and your family doing during quarantine here, Carlos? I know three kids, right?
Yes, we're doing well. We're doing well. We're just trying to make sure that we seize the moment as far as, you know, obviously this is not good for the world. However, I think that if we come out of this, when we come out of this situation, and we haven't been changed or we haven't grown, we haven't gotten stronger as a family, tighter as a unit, then we wasted the difficulty. That's really tragic. You know, when you go through a difficult moment, through a crisis, and then at the end of the crisis, you're no better than you were before. So that's what we've been focusing on. I'm telling you, homeschooling is not easy.
Yeah, I know it. I know it too. Yeah, man.
You know what I'm talking about. But yeah, we're doing well, and I appreciate you asking.
Well, I love that that mindset, and you've always seemed to, every time I've had a chance to talk to you and or read interviews with you, that it's an opportunity. This crisis is an opportunity, depending on your situation. I mean, at my house, we're doing all sorts of different home projects and trying to concentrate on our relationships and, you know, make the most of our time as best we can. It's interesting the way that you're thinking about it that way, and it does not surprise me. What do you miss most about the game not being a part of your life these days? I miss sitting on the balcony, sitting outside, and just hearing like the sound of the game on the radio or on the TV or whatever. Just kind of that rumbling quiet of a big crowd, that steady background that the game has always been for me for 6 months of every year. Tell me something you miss about the game right now, Carlos.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail right on the head. You know, as I, you're going to laugh at this because we just coincided very, 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 you know, almost to the exact idea. Look, usually I'll sit here and I'll try to find maybe some background video. You know, maybe it's just one of those relaxation videos and you just put out there, they throw pictures on the TV and you hear the sounds of nature and a little bit of soothing music. Well, you know what I do? I put up this, if you go and you just put up the sounds of the game. So there's no narration. This is just the sounds of the game of baseball, the crowd, you know, crack of the bat, you know, when someone makes the third out and you hear the tempo of the game. That's my background relaxation noise. So, yes, I mean, I miss the crack of the bat. You know, I miss the way that the mitt pops. You know, when a pitcher throws a pretty good fastball. You know, and the strike call of an umpire. You know, and I've been out here in the backyard playing catch with my son, and you know, you'll hear me often say, "Hey, make that glove pop! Make it pop! That's the most beautiful sound you could possibly hear." Like, he goes, "No, Dad, it's the crack of the bat." I'm like, "Yeah, you're right, but you have an aluminum bat, so there's no crack on that bat. It's just a ping." But yeah, the sounds of the game, man. Baseball's always been a constant in American culture. So when you don't have that tempo, when you don't have that rhythm, that daily rhythm, it really throws a lot of people up, whether they realize it or not, because it's been in the background. Even if you're not a huge fan, you know baseball's going on. You know, who won last night? Who's in first place? Red Sox, Yankees. You know, I know that's the Northeast situation. So very difficult moment, but, you know, baseball just sort of the heartbeat of this country.
Without a doubt, and a companion sport, a companion to our lives for 6 or 7 months every year. Carlos Pena is our guest right here on Hit and Run. You grew up in the Dominican, moved to Massachusetts at the age of 14. I imagine that was a crazy culture shock. And was baseball part of what made that more comfortable for you, transitioning from Dominican baseball culture to Massachusetts baseball culture?
Yeah, that was rough. That was rough because, remember, I came to the United States in the summer. So, you know, I'm going around and I'm like, wow, this is pretty cool. You know, I'm here in Haverhill, Mass, and I see the leagues are so well organized and baseball's going on, you know, loving how much they love the game. But then something came. Winter. That was it. Man, I was like, are you serious? I mean, what's going on here? Like, I didn't bargain for this. The leaves getting all colored, and then all of a sudden snowstorms come in, and that was the end of baseball. So I had to really improvise and play, you know, in practice and in basements, you know, setting up cages in the basement of the YMCA, for example. They allowed me to do that. But remember what we talked about earlier, you know, those difficulties and challenges, I think, eventually made me a better, you know, player, because I had to find ways to train. And I would take my balls in the middle of a basketball court, and I would be diving and sliding everywhere. I would take batting practice in a racquetball court, you know, where the balls would be like bouncing off the walls. And my father used to pitch batting practice. So think about it. I mean, it just makes you better. It really does.
Wow, I love that idea. BP inside a rack and ball court, where it's just bouncing back and forth, going around like crazy. You ever try to hit it the second time with the bat as it's on its way back?
No, I never tried that. That would have been a pretty good game. Now, listen to this, man. This is crazy. My dad used to take the hockey nets. So you get hockey nets from, you know, somewhere in the Y. They had like the hockey, maybe it was rollerblade hockey in the basketball court. We used to take those hockey nets, and we put him sideways, and we made him into a sort of L screen. And we used to go into the racquetball courts, and he used to pitch racquetballs at me, which are smaller than the baseballs. And we would take batting practice 4 hours there. And guess what? We never lost a ball.
Right, you're not hitting one, not hitting one out of the park.
A couple of shots, I'll tell you.
Yeah. What's something you remember, like, going, wait a minute, people eat that, or people do that, like in Massachusetts? Like, you're 14, 15 years old. I'm like, what the hell are you people doing here in terms of like something they would eat or something they would do at age 14 or 15, Carlos?
This is pretty funny, but it first started just with the mashed potatoes. And you know, I'm like, why so much mashed potatoes? And this is just in overall in the United States, you know, how much. Why the mashed potatoes so much, you know, and why the macaroni and cheese, you know, why, you know, what's going on? I never really, you know, that instant food, microwavable foods. And I'm like, what's going on? You know, what's going on? Like, this is not normal. And then last but not least, a pretty funny story. I got acquainted with the peanut butter and jelly sandwich, man. And I was like, wow. Whoever invented this is an absolute genius. this is unbelievable.
Oh, I love that.
Which is funny. What 14, 15-year-old kids never had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich? Well, here he is, Carlos Pena.
You? Yeah, that's who it was. Carlos Pena introduced to PB&J. This is amazing. It's got a chance to take off. I love it. Carlos, when did you realize that being mentally strong was a huge factor in baseball success? Because you've talked about this before, about just being, and it's clear anytime we talk, and for anybody who's hearing this now, just how focused you are and how you work to stay positive, and you always did during your career. When did you realize that was such a big deal in baseball? Because I think it's a bigger deal in baseball than almost every other sport, because there's more failure in baseball than almost any other sport.
Yeah, you know, and I appreciate you bring this up. I from a very, very, very young age, it wasn't like I just rolled into the park and started hitting. You know, it wasn't like that. It wasn't like that. I mean, I used to go to Little League, and I used to struggle in Little League. And that was so encouraging, because even though I would, like, foul tip a ball or maybe hit a line drive, but it was foul ball because I was late to every pitch, my dad would be like, wow, son, that was an amazing foul ball, man. You absolutely crushed that foul ball. And he used to celebrate my foul ball. So even though maybe in my mind I'm like, okay, I failed, there was something encouraging. Like I felt like it was coming. It was coming. So it made me show up again. So, you know, message to dads to always keep encouraging your kids. Doesn't mean that you say you're doing something right when it was wrong. It's just about encouragement, you know, and dad was right there to do so. So it kept me going until finally, Matt, I started hitting because I put in a lot of work. I used to hit all these popcorn kernels in my backyard until finally it clicked. And I just became a good hitter from then on out. But, yes, I believe in baseball. The ability to be able to endure failure, to endure pain, you know, it's very, very, very important. So as I went through all my high school years, you know, college years, I, you know, pretty much took it upon myself to say, I can, you know, my mind is going to be stronger than anyone else's. So I'm basically not going to have any competition. So I would have served other young players, and I would see what they would be interested in. I'm like, okay, I see that everybody else is interested in playing PlayStation. Hey, man, that's great. That's pretty cool. Back in the day, it was Sega Genesis or Nintendo or, you know, whatever it was when we were younger. And I would be like, okay, while they're playing Sega Genesis, I'm going to go run laps. Whoa, what a great idea. What a great idea. While they're playing Sega Genesis, I'm going to take some dry swings in the back. So I had this mentality from a young kid that's like, okay, I will do what no one else is willing to pay. You know, I will do what anyone else is willing to do. So I'll pay, you know, what anyone else is not, my competition is not willing to pay. So in college, it was the same way. And we wake up like at 4 a.m., at 5 a.m., and work out and then go to class. I'm like, all of my teammates were, you know, sleeping. Or maybe all of the college players in the whole entire country were sleeping while I was working out. So I used to think that way. I want to go back and give that young kid a hug, you know, because it's pretty cool. And when I got to the plate, I was like, you know what, this pitcher on the mound, he didn't eat the way I ate. You know, he didn't work out the way I worked out. So even if he's more talented than I am, he didn't work as hard as I did. So he should be defeated. Like, he should be defeated. And that was it. So that was my mentality, man. That was crazy. Like, to think back at that young man, you know, thinking that way, it's right on, you know. So it's always been like in the fabric of, I think, of our family to really just go the extra mile. So it's not about talent per se. It's more about, you know, perseverance and tenacity and what are you willing to sacrifice? What are you willing to set forth in order to attain your goal?
See, that's the special stuff. That's the stuff. And I guess you got it. I'm sure you've thought about it, where it comes from, whether it comes from your dad, but maybe it comes from something inside you that wanted that you started driving yourself. Maybe it was wanting to fit in and be strong in Massachusetts, all of a sudden put there as a 14 or 15 year old kid. But wherever that came from, that's the gold. And when we scout players in any sport, Carlos, talent is one thing. But having that mindset, that focus, and that kind of confidence, even if it's irrational confidence, you need it. You need it to be great. And that's the stuff. I wish we could scout it more easily or find a way to teach it better. Can you try to teach it to your kids? Can you try to pass that on?
Yes, I do make an attempt to pretty much teach, you know, that sort of resiliency, right? That despite the sting of the blade, you know, I tell the story to my kids that in the Orient, you know, young bulls, you know, when they are going to the fight arena, they test them, they prick them with a lance, and the way that they know how brave these bulls are, it's how many times they still charge forward despite the sting of the blade. And I try to tell these stories to kind of like relate to my kids. But it's a little bit more difficult simply because of the circumstances surrounding us. You know, obviously, you know, they are we are as a family more established than my mom and dad were when we arrived in the United States. So it's very difficult for me to paint a picture of them like, hey, man, you know, you're going to be living in an attic. You know, imagine that you're in an attic. Imagine that you're sleeping in a you know, the whole entire family sleeping on a mattress, on an attic with no heat in the middle of the winter. Like, I can't put that in their minds because it's not a reality for them. I don't even think they're able to imagine it, maybe slightly. You know, so eventually what happens is, you know, maybe the difficulties that we had growing up and adapting to the new culture and going through some difficult times helped me, you know, motivate me, where maybe my kids that are now, you know, well comfortable, you know, how do you teach them to fight for their dreams and to have that hunger? That's a lot harder for us, Matt, because see, eventually what happens is our ceiling becomes our kids' floor. So how do you keep on motivating them? I mean, that's the ultimate for a father, is actually to be able to make sure that you are a stepping stone so that they can keep going and keep on projecting forward. But it's a lot easier said than done. Trust me, I'm working on it on a daily basis, and I want to make sure I do a good job as a father.
Yeah, that's the stuff right there. Carlos Pena with us here on Hit and Run. Our ceiling becomes their floor. I'm reminded of, and Carlos is working these days over at Marquee Sports Network, as am I sometimes, Carlos. So I look forward to working with you on something over there. I saw you and Dan Plesac doing trivia against each other, which was great. I want to bring that up in a moment. But I bring up the Cubs and Marquee because, you know, Chris Bryant just had his son. And congratulations to Chris Bryant. But he told this radio station a few weeks ago at spring training that he didn't want his son to play baseball because his dad drove him and taught him. And all Chris had to do to beat what his dad had done was make the big leagues, because his dad didn't. And Chris made the big leagues. But what would Chris Bryant's son have to do? Be better than Rookie of the Year and MVP and World Series champion? So he doesn't want to put that on his son. Isn't that interesting? His ceiling has become, you know, he doesn't want that ceiling to be his child's floor. I get it.
Yeah. And it depends. You know, I think when we talk about our ceiling becoming our kid's floor, I mean it more in the sense of, you know, now they have a very solid foundation from them to spring from.
Yes.
Not necessarily to accomplish exactly what we have. You know, sometimes I'll hear my son say, Dad, you know, I want to be like you. And obviously that's a huge compliment. I'm like, son, while you say that, this is what I, you know, he says that. And then, you know, I go in a corner and I say, God, please help me be the man my son sees me as. Mm. So, you know, because at the end of the day, I know that the way that our kids see us is through this filter, and they look at us as if we were heroes, but they don't necessarily know our weaknesses. They don't necessarily know our limits, you know. And I try to remind them. It's like, no, you know, Dad went through some very difficult times. I made a very, very, very many poor choices. So otherwise, I wouldn't be able to teach you unless I was there, you know, failing, falling, and then getting back up. So I want you to be just the best version of you. I want you to be better than the guy that you were yesterday, I tell my sons and my daughter, mm-hmm. right? So it's parenting, I got to say, that's got to be the biggest challenge, oh my goodness, I've ever faced.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. One time I told my son after he had been crying at the doctor's office, Carlos, you'll appreciate this, he'd been crying, didn't want to get his shots, right? And it was terrible. I ended up having to hold him down and hold his arms while they gave him the shot. At the end of the night, as I was putting him to bed, I said, Ruben, you were very brave today. And he looked at me and he said, no, I wasn't. you can't blow smoke up their butts. They know it. They know if you're lying, you know?
100%. You know, they're very clever. You know, and maybe we were a little bit more gullible, I guess,
yes.
when we were younger. But these kids nowadays, man, they'll come right back at you like, wait a second. No, I was not.
Yeah, I was
cried the whole time.
I was terrified. My favorite moment from that trivia contest with you and Plesac was when you were asked who you homered off most in your career. And it's an amazing answer. Tell people who you homered off most in your entire career. It's a pretty damn good pitcher.
It was Lester.
How is that possible? How is lefty,
exactly.
Lefty? What are you doing?
Thank you. Exactly. So then what's funny is, like, look, I said, okay, Pettit, you know, Lester, you know, there has to be some of those two. And as I'm saying this, I'm almost like, what? What do you mean? I mean, these guys are, you know, Hall of Fame caliber pitchers. And here you are saying that you homered against them the most. And, of course, it was verified, you know, Lester, you know, I hit against him the most home runs against him. And people scratching their heads. I'm like, how can you hit lefty-lefty Hall of Fame caliber pitchers and do extremely well against them? It's like, you know, now that's a great question for me. So my answer to that was, man, maybe I should have focused just as intensely to the ones that were, you know, the number threes, number fours, the fringe pitchers, if there's anything to be called a fringe pitcher. You're in the big leagues, you're pretty good, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
What happened? Did I, like, let up against, like, the number threes and number fours and number fives?
Yeah.
And then really focused on the number ones and number twos? But, yeah, I don't know. I think it has something to do, you know, if you want to get scientific about it, I think it has something to do with cadence. And those, you know, and another guy was, you know, all these lefties that have those very deliberate movements to the plate. I did well. You know, Lester had one of those. Pettis certainly has a very slow, you know, big delivery to the plate. So their cadence match well with mine, with my rhythm. That is the best answer I can give you. I think it's pretty much right on.
Wow. Because
timing is everything. Now, those guys are like quick pitching and they don't let me breathe. They just kind of like fly step. And it was tough. It was tough for me to hit those guys.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Well, that's a whole nother realm of conversation. Carlos, I could talk to you for hours, man. I really appreciate it. And let's talk some hitting next time. And but best to you and your family. Keep doing what you're doing and stay safe, stay sane. And hopefully we get some baseball in 2020. That would be nice.
Speaks, it's truly a pleasure to come on this afternoon with you. It's already afternoon.
Yeah.
Oh, not yet.
Close.
Not yet.
Close
but
enough.
Yeah, man, always a pleasure. Please just let me know. We'd love to come back on and talk a little ball with you, talk a little hitting.
Sounds good. Sounds good to me. Carlos, thank you so much. Thanks for the time and be well.
All right, my man. Take care.
You got it. That's Carlos Pena.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.